This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR. Hopefully a little bit later on or soon, we'll be talking with our resident baseball expert, Jerry Gillette, about the Tigers and what the Tigers may be doing trade-wise here with the trade deadline coming up in a couple of weeks. So we'll find out from Gary what the Tigers are looking for with the trade deadline. So let's bring our good friend, Gary Gillette. Gary, how you doing, buddy?
I'm okay, Earl. You're expecting me to be the lead gossip here or something?
Yeah, I figure you know everything that's going on in Detroit since you live there. I figure you know all. I know the Tigers are kind of playing a trade, so I figure you got the inside scoop.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, if for my money, when I want to know the inside scoop, I would check with John Paul Morosi of Fox, or I would check with Jason Beck of MLB.com, or Lynn Henning of the News. But you know, I do what I can, but I don't travel with the team, of course, like these guys do, or get around the country as much as they do. But, you know, I'm glad to talk about it. I just don't profess to be the expert. I think John Morosi is, you know, a big expert on that kind of stuff, and he does a good job. I like John.
Yeah, well, that's good. But, hey, we just want to know what's going on. I mean, we know there's a lot of talk. I'm assuming they're looking for a second baseman and an outfielder, or are they looking for more? They're always looking for pitching. You never can have too much pitching.
Yeah, you know, Earl, I think that actually second base is not their big concern. I mean, of the three things you mentioned, I think second base is third on the list. I think the outfield, they would love to get an upgrade, a power-hitting corner outfielder. But you combine their faith in Andy Dierks, who I think is a little bit misplaced. I mean, he's got very little time in the majors total. And so there, you know, a lot of people in Detroit, I'm not saying the Tigers management, generally smarter. He's got 350 at-bats in the majors. And over last season and this season, he's a little bit above average offensively. Now, this year, obviously, before he got injured, he was hitting a lot better, but you know, he's a 26-year-old second-year player, and his hitting a lot better constitutes 37 games. But the real thing, I think, is that Brendan Bosch's resurgence has probably cooled their desire to trade a blue-chip prospect for a corner outfielder. I'm not saying they won't do it, because they might. You know, it all depends on what you're offered and what the price is. So I think that pitching help would be number one, because of the possibility Dierks is coming back soon and because of Bosch's resurgence and, of course, the continued excellent play of Quinton Berry. You know, what a surprise. I don't think anybody, including Quinton's mom and dad, could have predicted he would play this well if given a chance. You know, I just shudder when I look at their second base situation. If it were up to me, I'd probably put Ramon Santiago out there 5 days a week and rely on his sure glove and good ability to turn a double play at second, even though his range isn't so great. Thankfully, they seem to have finally benched Ryan Rayburn, if not, you know, permanently, at least temporarily, because he was just, you know, making people cry with his defense and his hitting, or lack of same. You know, Dave Dombrowski is really, really sharp at maximizing what he gets in return for what he gives up. That seems to be a requirement for managers. So I think that whether they get outfield help, pitching help, or second base help will really depend on what's being offered and what the price is.
Well, I assume the price would be quite high because everyone's asking for Castellanos, and you know, they're trying to convert him into an outfielder. How does that look like that's proceeding, and might he get called up as an outfielder before the year's out?
Well, you know, you don't want to overemphasize this after last night where Jacob Turner got the stuffing beat out of him. You know, I don't really think that matters last night. But I have concluded prior to last night that the Tigers were almost certainly not going to give up Castellanos, but would give up Turner. And that's for two reasons. One is, while Turner is a good prospect, he's not ready to help this club right now and may not be ready to help next spring. I thought that it was premature of the Tigers to give him a chance to win a rotation spot in spring training 2012, and last night's pounding just confirmed to me he is not ready. Whereas I think that they see Castellanos as a guy who could help them starting on opening day 2013. Given the dearth of, I don't want to say given the dearth of pitching. Pitching is actually on the ascent, and pitchers are ahead of hitters right now. League offense is down to about a 20-year low. And so it's not that there's a dearth of pitching. It's just that people always want pitching. I would think that they believe that Turner's value in trade is probably higher than his value to them. The Tigers have shown they can develop or trade or sign free agent pitching. Not so good on developing hitting. You know, they haven't really developed a lot of good position prospects, with some exceptions in the past few years. They believe, as many other major league clubs do, that it's easier to find free agent hitting or trade for hitting than it is to find free agent pitching, which is generally way overpriced, or to trade for pitching. So I would be surprised if they were to give up Castellanos. I would not be surprised if they were willing to trade Turner, and it has nothing to do with last night.
Do you think they're still happy with Valverde, even though he struggled somewhat this year, or are they starting to have some concerns about Valverde?
Well, if they have concerns, they're certainly not letting on. You know, one of the Dombrowski-Leland team great strengths is their loyalty. Another great strength is their basic imperviousness to criticism. They pretty much don't give a damn what people think or say. And, you know, that is outside the team. Obviously, they care about what Mr. Ilitch has to say or think. And they care about what other people. They care about Dave Dombrowski is known for listening to his scouts. One of the Tigers' terrific scouts said to me one time, he says, Dombrowski, Dave, calls me up and asks me what I think, and I tell him what I think, and sometimes he doesn't like it, and sometimes he does like it, sometimes he doesn't agree, but he always listens and gives me a fair hearing, and I don't have to be afraid to tell him something he doesn't agree with. And I think that's a great strength. I think another great strength is that Leland and Dombrowski work extremely closely together. That said, sometimes their loyalty goes a little too far, as we saw with people like Todd Jones, people like Ryan Rayburn. You know, they're so loyal and so confident in their opinions that they sometimes go too far and let guys just, you know, let guys stay in the lineup or bring them in when they're hurting the club. In Valverde's case, it certainly hasn't gotten to that point. I think they were well past that point with Rayburn. In Valverde's case, I certainly would be putting him out there now, although I would say I wouldn't hesitate to yank him when he doesn't seem to have his stuff. I wouldn't hesitate to yank him if I had Benoit or Koch or even Dotel in the pen and fresh. At this point, I think, to me, Valverde is the closer. But if he goes out there to start the ninth and you got a two-run lead and he walks the first guy and gives up a single to the next guy, yeah, I'd be looking at my bullpen to see, do I have Benoit out there? And is his arm, you know, is he rested? You know, the Tigers, another of their strengths is they don't let on when they're concerned until they have to. I mean, that's until they're basically their hand is forced because you can't deny it any longer. They play things very tight. And so how much concern they have, hard to tell. I think that they certainly don't want to go into the postseason with Valverde pitching the way he does. And I think they would be prepared to make some changes if he can't seem to straighten it out. On the other hand, they have very fresh memories of how well he pitched last year, which, of course, was almost superhuman. Practically no one save Mariano Rivera in his prime and a couple of other great relievers could repeat the kind of season Valverde had last year.
Yes. Do you see him basically, as we know, it looks like most relievers, the closers, that is, have a really short lifespan. We haven't seen many relievers in the present time being able to last more than 2 to 3 years.
Well, the great ones last longer, but even they have up and down patterns. I mean, Valverde is a very good reliever who had a great year last year. That's opposed to a great reliever who had a great year, you know. And there is a big difference there. Someone like Lee Smith or Mariano Rivera or Trevor Hoffman or guys like that, and there are, you know, a handful of others, who can do it year in, year out. And even when they have an off year, it's still pretty damn good. They're pretty rare. Valverde has always shown the ability to dominate hitters. But in the past, he's had an up-and-down pattern which seemed to be related, before he came to Detroit, it seemed to be related to injuries. In Detroit, he was really remarkably consistent. I mean, just astonishingly consistent. This year, to me, he's lost a little bit of his velocity off his fastball, and he doesn't have the ability to spot that split finger as well as he was. Last year, he had plus velocity on his fastball, could throw it to spots, and he could throw that split anywhere he wanted in any count. And that just made him an unbeatable, gave him an unbeatable combination. This year, not as sharp on both pitches in terms of his command, and I think his fastball velocity is down. At least a lot of the time it's down a couple miles an hour. I'd say the odds are 60-40 that he will still be closing, in the first game of the postseason for them. But it's not impossible to see him, be taken out of the closer slot either for temporarily or maybe even permanently, you know. Mm-hmm. Benoit can close games, in my view, and his stuff is pretty good.
Yeah, I've been sitting here trying to think of Gary. When's the last time the Tigers have really developed a hitter? I can't seem that they haven't. I know I can't remember the last time they developed some 300 hitters or something like that, some really good hitters coming out of their farm system. They have some okay hitters, but have they ever developed, or at least recently, developed some really strong hitting?
Well, I'd say the two best examples are Avila and Granderson. You know, Granderson is a pretty good hitter, and he had that problem where he couldn't hit lefties and apparently wasn't either willing to listen to advice from Lloyd McClendon or didn't take the advice especially well. And I a lot of people around here use that as one of the arguments for firing McClendon. I think that's incorrect because Granderson went to the Yankees, and it took him 4 full months before he listened to what their hitting coach was saying and changed the style where he could hit lefties and straightened out against righties. So when the Tigers traded him, he was swinging for the downs on practically every pitch, and his batting average was so depressed that it made him, a marginal player. It's also his defense had declined. But Granderson now is an MVP-caliber player, and the Tigers developed him. He was, I think, considered a good prospect, but not a great prospect, and certainly has overachieved in the majors. Avila is a treasure. There are a lot of people who have been lumping Avila in with Johnny Peralta and Ryan Rayburn and Brennan Bosch as the guys who are not getting the job done in the bottom part of the order, and guys who, well, some of them, of course, sometimes are batting in the top part of the order, but mostly down there. And that's unfair. Avila plays catcher. Catcher is a brutal position to play. I don't know if you saw Avila got hit last night on the side of the face by the bat, and he stayed in the game. I was thinking, like, take him out, because he might have a concussion. And if he gets another fastball off the mask or something, that could be serious. But he stayed in the game. He shook it off. And the next at-bat, if I remember correctly, he lined a base hit. Avila is a very, very good hitter for a catcher. It is very common for good hitting catchers to have this up-down cycle. Roy Campanella is probably the perfect example of that, where 1 year they have a really good year, the next year that's somewhat of a down year. But for a catcher, he's a terrific hitter, and he was an MVP-caliber player last year, and he will be again in the future. So to say that because his hitting is down, both average and power, he's not a good hitter is, I think, misguided. I'm not saying you said that, but a lot of people in Detroit have been on his case. So Avila has been a huge plus for them. Most teams would kill to have a catcher as good as him, and Granderson was a big development. But that said, they do struggle to develop good hitting position players. Most of the guys that they have either have serious flaws. I mean, think of Brandon Inge, think of Craig Monroe and these guys that, well, you know, that identified with the Tigers, they tend to be free swingers who either come through the system or get traded for, and they just keep hacking away until the pitchers make adjustments, and then all of a sudden they see their production decline. The Tigers do have a not enviable track record in recent years developing position players.
Okay, 21 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Carrying a tune on the campaign trail becomes fodder for attack ads. Ron Paul hangs on by a thread, and Sarah Palin waits for her convention invite. I'm Jennifer Ludden. Ken Rudin's back for another round of The Political Junkie, plus an exit interview with congressional correspondent Andrea Seabrook. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock, right here on AM 870 WKAR.
This is Scott Pohl with the weather forecast. Our high 87 today, partly sunny, with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. A chance of rain and thunderstorms overnight with a low of 65. Tomorrow, partly sunny and again a chance of rain and thunderstorms, the high 82. Mostly sunny Friday, the high 81.
And we're talking with Gary Gillette, talking baseball with us. Give us a call at 355-9527 or toll-free 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Gary, I hope you can stay with us for a few more minutes. I got a few more questions for you before we let you go. Just want to know, when you look at this Tiger team, you know, I guess we're still questioning, how confident are you now that they'll win their Central Division crown?
I put that in my category of guarded optimism. The White Sox have been playing much, much better than I'd predicted. I mean, the same way no one could have predicted that just wretched, all-time wretchedly bad season Adam Dunn had last year, no one could have predicted this resurgence. And several other players in the White Sox are playing astonishingly well. I didn't think the White Sox would provide this level of competition. The Indians are playing about as well as I expected. So instead of winning the division comfortably, which is what I thought would happen, with the second most likely scenario is they'd beat the living daylights out of everybody and win it by 15 games, which is the second most likely scenario, they're in what I consider the third most likely scenario at the start of the year, which is they're going to have a two- or three-team race, I think, till the end. Now, it's possible that everything will click. You know, I would just send an email to one of my friends who's a writer in Texas yesterday, and he was asking me about the Tigers. And I think that if the Tigers get either Fister or Scherzer going, and one of them in the next 12 starts is consistently good to decent, that just means league average ERA or a little bit better. That plus one other pitcher on their staff straightening out. It could be Porcello. Not so likely. It could be getting Smiley back and having him pitch well. It could be having the bullpen stabilize. That will give them, I think, enough to beat out Cleveland and Chicago. But if, you know, they don't get, if Fister, Scherzer, Smiley, Valverde, they keep struggling, which could include just simply being injured or unavailable, they're going to, I think, struggle to stay ahead of the White Sox and Indians. Of course, this all assumes they're hitting, which they've been hitting again in the last couple of weeks. Their hitting has come to life. If they go back into the kind of first-half swoon, then they're going to be in trouble because the bet going into this year is their hitting would more than compensate for their bad defense, and their defense has been as bad as one could have expected, that excepting Cabrera. He is better than I expected. Even though he's not an average major league third baseman, he's still better than I expected and certainly worth playing there. Their defense has been as bad as one could expect, and their hitting has not made up for it so far.
Yeah, I know you're not surprised at, but how do you evaluate Fielder's play at first base? I mean, he looks like a very, very average first baseman, I guess. Defensively, do you think that's passable, or is he doing about as good as he can?
Oh, I think Prince tries hard. I enjoy watching Prince field. I enjoy watching him run. He seems like he's running a lot faster than he actually is. He's really pumping out there. You know, he's a great personality and a real asset to the team from a marketing point of view, and he's a pretty good hitter. I mean, I love watching him whack line drives around the park. Fielder is, in my view, a below-average first baseman overall. I think he's one of those guys that Branch Rickey used to say he fields his range. I think he's pretty good at scooping the ball. I think he's pretty good at fielding balls he gets to. The problem is a lot of balls get by him. And, you know, he's certainly worth playing there. He's not killing you over there. He's not helping you like a good defensive first baseman would, but he's not killing you. The problem is, in order to put him there, you had to move Cabrera to third. Cabrera, again, he's played much better than I thought he would. I really thought there'd be a disaster scenario at third base. Cabrera, I think, has actually got better range than I expected, but he misses a lot of routine plays, especially a lot of things that don't show up in the box score, like a ball will come bouncing in from the outfield on a one-bounce throw where there's a play at third. A good third baseman would get it and make the swipe tag. A lot of times Cabrera either gets it and can't make the tag or the ball bounces by him, but it won't show up as an error if the runner doesn't advance. Similarly, on other plays, he misses a fair number of routine plays than an experienced third baseman would. Now, I know he had experience playing third base in Florida, but he wasn't that good in Florida. With you know, a full season, and then next year I think he'll be better at those routine plays. And he's been, you know, he's made some plays that I said to myself, boy, I never thought he could make that play. So they're not killing him, but you know what's really killing him is their defense, you know, in left field, right field, second base, and to a lesser extent at shortstop. Peralta is a credible major league shortstop, but he's not a good one. And again, they thought that Peralta's bat and Rayburn's bat and Bosch's bat, you know, would all make up for the defensive liabilities, and they just haven't so far.
Yes, and that's been a problem. Now, one other problem. Do you see it all? Can Minnesota and Kansas City not really get into the race for their division, but make it probably more difficult? Can you see them just making it really difficult for the Tigers in that division?
The Twins, I don't think so. I think they're toast again. I was in Minnesota last month for the annual Society for American Baseball Research Convention, so I got a chance to go to Target Field and look at the Twins up close. Although, of course, I see them in Detroit. They just look bad. I mean, in a way, it's heartbreaking because they do everything the right way, grow your own talent, and they also went to the bank to sign Mauer and Morneau. And while Mauer is playing reasonably well, he's not catching every day, and his value, of course, is much higher as a catcher. And Morneau is hitting, you know, for power, but his average is way down. In a way, they had two perennial MVP candidates who basically, for fluke reasons, a collision and concussion and this mysterious illness that Mauer had, have become merely ordinary to good players. And given the amount of money they're paying each one of them, that's a terrible blow for a club with, in a limited market. Now, their revenue is pretty good because of Target Field, but if they keep playing the way they did last year and this year, they're not going to have that level of revenue because they won't be filling Target Field at premium prices every night. I don't see the Twins as any trouble. They can, of course, obviously knock you out in a key series. The Royals I worry more about. Every year we hear the Royals talk about as a team of the future, and every year the future advances one more year. The Royals have some terrific prospects, a very good farm system, none of which constitutes being a good major league club. I'm skeptical that the Royals are going to put it together this year, but they certainly are dangerous enough in any short series. But, you know, it's the White Sox that I'm worried about more than the Indians or the Royals. But you know, there are still three teams that could win this division, and that means there are two other teams you got to stay ahead of. The Tigers, of course, are in second place now. They really need to keep the hitting up and get some improved pitching. Personally, I think that the players in the last 15 years, it's become very fashionable to say the general manager needs to go out and get what it takes to win at the end of July or make a waiver deal in August if we have a problem. You know, my attitude would be, hey, guys, we pay you a lot of money. I mean a lot of money. And if you don't think you're good enough to win, maybe we should get somebody else. Because I'm all for making a deal if I have to, but I think it's unfair to criticize general managers if they don't make a deal to address a problem at the trade deadline. Because, after all, if everyone knows you've got a problem, they're going to double the asking price.
Right.
And at some point, it's not worth risking mortgaging your future for a temporary solution. The Tigers have enough talent right now to win that division and to win it by 10 games if their hitting continues and their pitching straightens out. And they shouldn't. The players should not feel like they need to be rescued by a deadline deal. And the Tigers have enough talent, even if their pitching struggles or their hitting relapses somewhat, they have enough talent to win that division by 3 to 5 games. And it's up to the players to go out and do that. Now, I'm not saying the Tigers players have been complaining. In general, you don't see that as much. You see that a lot more in other cities where the players will openly complain that the GM or the front office let them down. You don't see that in Detroit, but there is always that undercurrent. And, of course, the fans. The fans whine and snivel all the time. Oh, my God, how come they didn't do that? How come, you know, if Cole Hamels goes somewhere, if the Phillies decide to trade him, you know, there'll be, how come we couldn't get a guy like that, you know? Or it's really hard. And the Tigers, I think, in general, have a good perspective on the balance of long-term versus long-term pain versus short-term benefit. And I don't think they'll make that kind of move. On the other hand, it is true that the Tigers want to win now. This team is built to win now. The payroll is geared to win now, and that they do not want a rerun of 2008 where they peaked, had the fans stoked to a fever pitch, had all-time record preseason ticket sales, and then fell on their faces. This team isn't going to finish last, of course, but finishing second, even two games behind the Indians or the Twins, is going to be a bad sign. This is a team built to win now, and it should win.
Do you think, I know there's always been a lot of talk about maybe Jim Leland retires after this year. Do you see him retiring or maybe coming back for one more year, trying to get an extension for another year, or do you think this is it for him?
I think if the Tigers win the World Series, he retires, just like Tony La Russa. Mm-hmm. I think if the Tigers go to the World Series and fight a hard-fought battle, maybe lose in Game 6 or Game 7, I think he probably retires. The Tigers don't make it to the World Series, I think he comes back. You know, or if they make it to the World Series and are embarrassed like they were in 2006, I think he comes back. That's assuming, of course, the Tigers win the division. If the Tigers don't win the division and it isn't close, you know, maybe they don't ask him to come back. You know, Leland has benefited a lot from the Tigers' patience. There are other teams who would have been as patient, but a lot of teams that would have fired him because of repeated second-half collapses. Jerry Green, you know, was who was the dean of American sports writers. He holds Baseball Writers Association card number 2, and the guy who holds card number 1 is not a sports writer, is not a writer. Jerry wrote a piece in the Detroit News on Sunday talking about the Tigers' recent pattern of second-half collapses. You know, under Leland, the second half has been hold your eyes and hope you hang on, except for last year. If they repeat last year and they go into the postseason and go deep into the postseason, then, you know, things look good. But if they don't win, I don't know. You know, the Tigers, like I said, they don't really care what people think. They don't really care all the people screaming on talk radio about fire Jim Leland. But at some point, they have to look at it and say, you know, what are we missing here?
Hey, Gary, I want to thank you for being with me. As you know, it's always a pleasure talking baseball with you. You know I'm going to have you back on again, and we'll talk more baseball. But it's always a pleasure having you on and talking baseball with you, buddy.
Well, you know, Earl, I love talking about baseball. Can I have 30 seconds talk about something else?
You definitely can.
You know, I was doing some research in the Sporting News the other day, and I came across a 1954 piece in the Sporting News where Spike Briggs, the owner of the Tigers, and John Cobes, the Michigan State baseball coach, were having a huge war of words about the state of college baseball, where Briggs was complaining that college baseball was on the wane and that they should let college players play in the summer in the minor leagues. And John Cobes was basically telling the world, because he was telling them in the Sporting News, that Briggs didn't know what he was talking about and that college baseball was thriving and the major league should be grateful for all the talent that Cobes has produced. I just thought it was fascinating that Cobes was going hammer and tongs with Spike Briggs in the Sporting News. If I remember correctly, the piece started on page 1, that issue of the Sporting News. So
That's a good one. Yeah, I've tried to look that up.
I'll send you the link because it's a fascinating thing. And Cobes is more right than wrong, although Briggs ultimately was proven right about playing summer ball because collegiate players now play in the summer wood bat league. They're not professionals, but they do play summer baseball with wood bats, and that's been good for their development.
Oh, so true. Hey, Gary, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend, and I'll call you again soon, and we'll talk more baseball, buddy.
Okay, thanks, Earl. Okay, bye.
Thank you. Yeah, bye-bye. And that's Gary Gillette talking baseball with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. 35 minutes past the hour of 1 o'clock. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 355-9527 or toll-free 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, I hope many of you had a chance to watch Real Sports last night on HBO. Great program. For my money, it's always been the best program on sports. They did a very excellent program last night on hazing and Dominique Morsonneau, who has a sister, which she didn't know about, but two excellent programs. And the program on hazing was very fascinating. Went centered around, of course, Florida A&M, AMM, and, you know, and talked about the death of the drum major in Florida A&M's program, but in the problem of hazing at the black college institutions. So a very good program. If you get a chance, watch it. It'll be on again. That's Real Sports on HBO. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. You know, spread the word around, though. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports with us every afternoon right here on AM 870 WKAR. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. As we've been talking, the Detroit Tigers, I still feel they're going to win their division. I still think they are. It's going to be tight, though. I don't think it's going to be a runaway. I know Gary said that he's still hoping and thinking that they might win by 10 games. I'm not sure they can win by that margin, but I can see them winning by 3 or 4 games. But like him, I'm not as optimistic about the Tigers winning the division. Chicago's playing quite well, and Cleveland's playing quite well. So both those teams are playing well, and they're giving the Tigers problems here in their central division. So, you know, keep your eye on it. Keep your eye on the Tigers and what they do. I'm not so sure, like Gary, not so sure about Jim Leland. Will he be coming back next year? I think that's still up in the air. That's still a question. Will we see Jim Leland in the dugout next year managing the Detroit Tigers? More importantly, though, if he does retire or gets fired, who do they get to replace him? I know people always look at how the guy they want, the guy to go, he's just not doing the job. But I never hear who they can get, who they think would be a good replacement. I know that would be the problem. The old Boston manager would be available. But I think you'd look around to see what's out there. So just give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. 39 minutes after the hour, 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
2011 was a wild weather year, a kick in the pants for cities and state legislatures that are starting to plan for more extremes. And it's not just flooding, fires, and heat. It's about disease, food safety, and mental health. I'm Jennifer Ludden. States and cities planning for more record-breaking weather. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Today's high 87 degrees and partly sunny with a chance of rain and thunderstorms. A chance of showers and thunderstorms tonight, too, with a low of 65. Partly sunny and a chance of thunderstorms on Thursday, the high 82, and mostly sunny with a high in the low 80s on Friday. I'm Scott Pohl.
Well, we had a couple of signings yesterday, and basically, I guess you can say we had all the signings yesterday. Jeremy Lin signed with the Houston Rockets. He accepted their offer sheet that was made official yesterday. People have been saying that New York Knicks would not match his offer, so he just re-signed in the sticking with the Houston Rockets. And, of course, RG3 was signed yesterday. He was signed by the Washington Redskins, so the Heisman Trophy winner will be going to Washington. So congratulations to him. And, of course, as you know, Kirk Cousins will be his backup there in Washington. So a couple of signings yesterday. That's always, you know, you hear those things. You just like to see him get the business out of the way. There's so much business in sports, and you know, with when guys signing, you look at that business aspect maybe even more so. I mean, you know, I know in the old days we used to talk about trades and how you trade this guy for that guy, and now you got to look at trades and do they match up money wise? Because you can't make a trade unless you have you giving up a substantial pound of money. You've got to do the other way around, taking money away. So that's the thing. You always have to look at the money aspect of any trade. It may not make sense that the trade might help your team, but it may be help your team financially. So you look at those financial bookmarks in trades. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKR. As you know, it's called the Open now. I don't like the Open. I still call it the British Open, but I guess, you know, that's just my opinion. But hey, it's the Open now, and that's what they call it. But it's one of the major golf tournaments. It's always a good, tough challenge for the golfers. But the Open is now the third major coming up, and we will see how that one goes. And Tiger Woods has been installed as a four-shot favorite to win the Open. So that's pretty good, even though he didn't win the last one or the last couple after he won a couple of weeks ago. He still held, and people still think that he can do it again, and he may win another major. I've always thought that he'll probably win another major. I don't know if he's going to break the record or not now. He's certainly got time to break the record. He's only 36. And I know Nicholas went till he was in his mid-40s when he won his last major. So he could win another major. He could break Jack's record without a doubt. But will he do it or not? That's the major question. He's had trouble with his knees. He's had a lot of trouble with his knees. He's adjusted his swing and everything. So we'll see just exactly how well he does. But Tiger Woods is still playing pretty good, but he's inconsistent now. I'll always say that. He's basically a very good golfer, like all the other golfers on the Pro Tour. You know, he's just inconsistent. Some weeks he'll have a great put together three or four rounds together, and some weeks he can't buy a good shot. So we'll probably just continue to see that talent in the way it's being played out for Tiger Woods. And he's trying to play over. He's had a lot of knee injuries, and those might be costing him a little bit. But he's came back. He's playing well enough on tour, and he certainly can win again. So I'm pretty sure he's going to win another major. I'm not sure if he's going to break Jack's record at all, but he shall play and win some major golf tournaments. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. And, you know, we're not going to have to hear too much about Lynn Sanity now because he's going to Houston. Not like in New York where you heard every little thing that Jeremy Lin was doing. And now he'll be in Houston. He'll be a little bit quieter. Well, the marketing arm isn't as strong in Houston as it is in New York. So we'll just have to hear a little bit of Jeremy Lin. And if he's really going to have to play well, I think he's a okay player. I don't think he's good as he was made out to be, Aaron. I just think Jeremy Lin is an okay type player. And I think he'll do well in Houston. He did well in New York, but I just can't see him being 25 points, 10 assists a night kind of guy. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I just think he's a decent player, not a great player.
Yeah, I haven't been convinced either. But I think he's actually a pretty good fit in Houston. So, you know, it just happened that he was a good fit in New York at that particular time. I think they had some injuries at the time that allowed him to get some more playing time. But you know, you never know. I think he's a good fit in Houston, but you're right. It's Houston, so, you know, that's not where the media's at. So, yeah, he's going to be a little bit quieter, which may help him in the end, you know, but he was obviously able to handle the pressure in New York, so who knows? I guess we'll have to wait and see, but, yeah, I don't think he's he hasn't convinced me that he's a top-tier player for sure, but we'll see. People, if he works hard and improves, you never know.
Yeah. I've been a little bit surprised that some of the preseason prognosticators are rating Denard Robinson as the best quarterback coming back in the Big Ten. I mean, he's considered the best quarterback in the Big Ten. Matter of fact, he's going to address the Big Ten at the media days coming up. You know, he's going to address them and the Big Ten. So we'll just see about how he does, how he speaks up. But, you know, he's being caught to and demanded more of being more of a leader. So, you know, he's going to be more of a leader this year, which should help Michigan. And I think he's people are thinking he really should improve his play. He got to cut down on his interceptions, of course, and that'll help him and make Michigan a much stronger team this year. And, yes, he's improved every year, so I would expect he'll improve even in this year. I know people when they talk about players and they look at them and say, oh, he's not that good. He's throwing interceptions. They don't realize, you know, the guy gets better. He's gotten better each and every year. So I would see that he should be a pretty good ball player. Well, let's go to the phones. We got Mr. Tate from down in Atlanta. Hey, Mr. Tate, how you doing?
Pretty good. How about yourself, Mr. Robinson?
Okay.
Good. As always, I'm listening, and I appreciate you taking my call. I just kind of listened a little bit about what you guys were saying as far, because I'm such a big basketball guru, what you guys were saying as far as Jeremy Lin. You know, with all the issues, I think, going on in New York, it's kind of one of those type of things where I don't think it's very fitting. I think the most fitting thing about New York for Jeremy Lin, in which it was by God's grace that he had the opportunity, you know, the wind blew just the right way for him with the injuries and things of that nature with Iman Shumpert and things of that nature. So even though Jeremy Lin was a lot more of a defensive liability for a team like that, I think it was good to start off his career in a big market because Golden State was definitely not that where he had first started out at. Well, with that being said, I think that Houston is also a lot better market than New York for him simply off of the fact that, you know, the Asian community, similar to, you know, when Yao Ming came in and he played and he kind of, you know, gathered up some different things and different cultures of people that, you know, from the Houston, the local Houston area and things like that. But I think it's a little bit more calmed down than the New York market. So I think that it'll fit him a whole lot better. And he doesn't have to be, you know, that guy with all the spotlight. He can kind of come in, and we know that he's going to be a little rough around the edges and a little inconsistent, but it won't be as much of a big deal as it was for him in New York, where he was, you know, relied upon to take the team to, you know, much higher heights in that, you know, in the amount of time that he had with New York, considering the injury to Carmelo Anthony, and then same thing following with Amari Stoudemire, who had just come back. I'll keep listening, hear what you guys have to say. Thank you so much, Mr. Robinson, for taking my call, and I'm going to listen. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. And that's the thing with Jeremy Lin. You know, he played in Houston before, so he's going back to a place where he's comfortable and familiar with. He went to Houston after playing in Golden State for a while. And, yes, I think he'll be very comfortable there. I think, and Houston already said, they're not going to make the same mistake and let him go like they did that first time, whereas New York picked him up. Some people still think New York should have went on and picked him up just because of the marketing opportunities in New York, that he's still going to be marketed and he's still going to make a ton of money even in Houston, but he would have made a lot more just because he was in New York. So it'll just be interesting to see how that whole marketing niche falls holds up. Now let's talk a little bit about that baseball again. Hey, Aaron, what do you think about the Tigers? What's your opinion on the Tigers?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Gary kind of summed him up pretty well overall. I mean, he, you know, I would agree. I don't think their main concern is second base. Frankly, I think the pitching, as we witnessed last night, might be a little bit of a problem in several areas. And, you know, the outfielding, you know, that it's hard to say because right now Dierks is, you know, injured a little bit or he's coming back or I forget where he's at. But, you know, if they can get their lineup back to where it's, like, consistent, you know, I feel like their lineup's just kind of been inconsistent. But luckily you have someone like Barry, you know, filling in. You know, that was who no one would have guessed that. So, you know, that's great. But, frankly, I still think they need help on the pitching end of things. If they don't get the help there, I think they're going to continue to struggle. I mean, frankly, if you don't have good pitching, I mean, a lot of teams, obviously, they can never, like you said earlier, you can never have enough pitching, but they still need help in that area because, you know, we witnessed last night, even when Verlander, you know, and some of the other starters are on top of their game, you still got the relievers assuming that the starters, you know, are going 6-7 innings. You still need help there. So, and if those guys aren't producing either, the relievers, you know, there's potential there that, you know, things are going to screw up. And then, too, the Tigers have been a little inconsistent with hitting. I mean, last night, granted, I know it was hot as heck out last night, so maybe that had an effect on things, but what'd they have? Four hits. I mean, you know, they're better off bunting the whole game probably, but. You know, it is what it is, but hopefully I think they just, once they get their lineup consistent, I think that's the key. Their lineup, I think, has just been changing and changing. Guys leave, one guy comes back, then another guy leaves, another guy, you know, all that back and forth kind of screws up with the lineup. But once they get all that stuff solidified, we'll see whether or not they make a trade. That could change things too.
Hey, Aaron, I got this. I don't know if you've seen this, but Governor Mark Drayton has a theory on why so many players in the NFL have been getting into trouble with the law. He says he's the governor of Minnesota. Mark Drayton has said they have too much time on their hands, similar with soldiers returning from the war. He says in an interview with the Minnesota Public Radio on Tuesday, he said NFL players are off about half the year. And with him being off, he said he compares football to combat, calling it slightly civilized war. He said he doesn't excuse bad behavior, but adjusting to normal life is a challenge. Dayton calls Viking running back Adrian Peterson an outstanding model assistant citizen. He notes that Peterson denies he was responsible for an altercation with an officer in a Houston nightclub on July 7th. And that's what he's talking about. But he thinks it's because players have too much time in their hands. I sort of thought that way in sometimes, but you can't make them practice and play all the time. They've got to have some free time. And unfortunately, it's like you look at all the trouble that players get in colleges. It's always in the off season. You know, they don't get in much trouble during the season, but in the off season, that's a problem, and it's a problem for pro players as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. I would even add to his so-called theory that, one, they do have too much time on their hands, and two, they have too much money in their hands.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, if they didn't have that money, I mean, they'd be sitting at home, maybe doing some work, you know, around the house, whatever. But, you know, they live in houses that are, you know, they hire people to do all the work. And so they just go home, they sleep, they wake up, get a bowl of cereal or something in the morning, then they go out and do their thing, go to the nightclub at night and blow who knows how much money. But you know, I would agree with his assessment. They do have too much time in their hands, because if you think about it, when they're on their schedule, you know, full time, that's all they're doing. That, you know, that's it. It's just football, nothing else. You know a lot of these people that have families and, you know, wives and stuff, as far as the NFL is concerned, you know, the families do suffer. You know, you've seen some documentaries where the families, unfortunately, you know, they can't travel everywhere because kids are in school or whatever the case is. But, you know, that's what they do. And so when it comes time for the off season, some of these players that, you know, maybe single or you just, you know, are young and so are still just, you know, having fun with their lives, you know, that's what they have to deal with. But no one teaches them that, you know. And so when you give a 20, 21-year-old, 22, 23, whatever the case is, whatever the age is, you give them, you know, $10 million and say, hey, you got 4 months to do whatever you want or whatever their timeline is, and they're used to just being on football full-time, and they don't do anything else during the schedule during football, well, what are they going to do? Well, they're probably going to get into some trouble. You know, but if you think about it, how many players are in the NFL – and how many actually get in trouble, you know, it's still a small amount considering. But the reality is, It's a professional sport. They're supposed to be on, you know, they're not supposed to be getting in trouble. People are supposed to be looking up at these people, you know, as inspiration, you know, and heroes, you know, sometimes even. So, you know, unfortunately, that's just how it is. But that's an interesting theory, especially when you're relating it to soldiers coming back home, which obviously has been something that's really been on the up, you know, up and up, that people have been more and more aware in the last handful of years, ever since, you know, we've been overseas, for sure.
Yes, and they'll keep coming. They'll always be coming back, and thank goodness more of the soldiers will come back. And of course, we know many athletes will continue to get in trouble. We hope that they don't get in trouble, but as you know, it's unfortunate, but so many of them do get in trouble these days. But you know, that's the thing. There's so much going on in the world, and so many athletes feel that they can do things, and I know some athletes feel entitled. They think, you know, they can get away with what they want to get away with. And that's always unfortunate when athletes feel that they're entitled and they can get away with things. They don't have to follow the same laws that some of us that is out here have to do. And some of them feel like, hey, they're entitled to things and they not have to follow these same laws, which sometimes comes back to bite them from time to time. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. We love talking with you each and every day, so give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on WKAR. Make sure you come back and join us tomorrow, you know, and talk more sports with us. It's always a pleasure talking with you, whether you want to talk about the D-Tigers or some of the other teams in the Major League Baseball. You know, with the football season getting ready to start up, college football season, NFL season is getting ready to start. Teams are getting ready to report to training camp. So it means one thing. Fantasy football is right around the corner. And I know if you're like me, you got a lot of friends who play fantasy football. So guys will be talking a lot of fantasy football in the very near future. If you know that, that's right around the corner. Fantasy football will be going on. And of course, that's always fun for the football fans. And so many football fans play fantasy football. It's amazing, Aaron, how big fantasy football, how that has grown over the years.
Yeah, I don't blame it myself, frankly, just because I'm too busy to even bother with it. But, it's amazing how who's ever the genius that came up with fantasy football or just fantasy sports in general, he's probably sitting on his couch somewhere just racking in the dough. But, yeah, I mean, they have fantasy, you know, all this for every single other sport, too. I mean, they have fantasy baseball, which, you know, my ex-roommate, you know, he used to play it, but unfortunately with baseball, that's a daily game, so that becomes a chore in itself. But, yeah, you know, so many people play it and just never got into it, and I'm sure. I'm guessing you don't do it yourself, or do you?
I don't. I used to do baseball, but I don't do baseball anymore. I just do football.
Okay, you do football. Okay,
and I've done fantasy basketball a couple of times, and it's fun. I just haven't had the chance, or haven't been a chance to get into some other leagues. But it's fun as well. So yeah, I sort of like some of the fantasy sports. It's more fun to do. You know, some people really take it serious. I mean, I've been in leagues where people take it really, really serious in that league, and I always look at it. It's a fun thing to do, and it's just a nice participation. But some people really take it serious. So if you get into a league, just look at who's in the league, and just find out, do they look at it as fun, or do they try to win it all out? Some people will do anything to win. They cut corners, do whatever to win. So you'll always see that. Hey, we want to thank you all for listening today. We want you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing and Michigan State University. So come back and join us tomorrow and talk more sports with us right here on WKAR. I want you to make sure you have yourself a safe and pleasant evening, and I'll hear from you tomorrow right here at AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Have a safe and pleasant evening, everyone, and we'll see you tomorrow. Join us again right here on WKAR. We'll have more guests for you right here on AM 870.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.